This is the True Faith Podcast. I'm Norman Riley, hosting temporarily in place of Alex, who isn't here, but is, because he's joining me on the line from a hotel in beautiful Heathrow to talk about Saturday's match against Leicester City at St James's Park. Alex, how's it going?
Very well, Norman, very well, thanks.
This is a bit of a weird role reversal, isn't it? But hey, let's see how we get on.
I'm sure.
We'll manage, mate. I've got a I've got a question for you. Given last Saturday's setup against Chelsea and the subsequent struggles of a few players, what would you like to see against Leicester in terms of formation and personnel this weekend? I suppose I'm kind of referring to maybe Matt Ritchie's position and performance, Mo Diarmi in the obvious the Shelvey question. What are your thoughts?
I think my thoughts will echo pretty much everyone listening to this and that. We all want to see what fans would consider to be our best team out and our best formation. Now, what's our best formation? Well, it's the one that we won the league with last year and the one that picked up four wins with earlier this season. The switch to 4-4-2 hasn't worked. The switch to 3-5-2 hasn't worked. That definitely didn't work. So I think I just want to see we go back to, it's almost like a cliche with back basics, back to what we know and love under Rafa, which is being an obdurate, stubborn team to break down who doesn't concede any goals and who might nick one. You know, the fact is that, you know, a few weeks ago, Leicester and Everton, you were looking at that as potential relegation rivals, but they're both relatively flying in terms of recent form. Klopp has done a good job since he went in, which is so weird because, you know, they had a great British manager in, and why you would want to try and change that for some foreign loser is beyond me. But, you know, it seems to have worked with this this Puel that they've dragged in from nowhere who's done nothing in his career for brave old Craig Shakespeare, who, you know, actually finds himself back at Everton with Sam Allardyce and the other British lads. So it's a harder game than that, and I think a point's a good result. I'd love to win it, but let's get back to 4-2-3-1. Let's get Jonjo, Shelvey, Miguel Marin on the same team, and let's get back to a positive feel at St James's Park, because the Watford game just wasn't good enough in the second half of the Bournemouth game wasn't good enough, so work to be done.
All right, agreed. And in terms of the fullbacks, obviously would see Yedlin at right back, given that the sort of 3-5-2 formation at Chelsea, as you say, the players seem to look a little bit confused to me at times, especially Matt Ritchie. He's not really the kind of player to play in that position. And part of me had thought a few times that I wouldn't. Richie could work as a wing back. He could work as a wing back, but he just had one of those days where he thought it's probably not going to work out for him in that position. In terms of left back, who would you stick in at left back on Saturday?
Well, according to the media, Paul Dumet is in line to make his return. So whether he gets in the team or not, I don't know. I think, depending on where Albrighton plays, which side, he could be important, because Albrighton's a big lad, physical presence. Mahrez tends to play 10 these days, and they tend to play that great the other side. So I would like to see Dummett come back in. You know, he's been a miss. I think his physical presence would be fantastic, though he's been out for, what, four months? So it'd be a lot to ask him to come straight back. I don't think he's played any reserve team football either. Not that pay that much attention to it, like. I don't know if he's available. But I think Mankio and Yedlin is the two have done a good job, and I know Yedlin had a stinker and then some against Watford and was to blame against West Brom for one of the goals. But, you know, let's stick, you know, we're a decent team earlier this season. I don't buy the narrative that it was luck, that it was this and that, it was the other teams doing badly. No, we played well against Stoke and West Brom. We played well against Southampton, played well against Liverpool. We can recreate that. Let's use the same players. Let's use Yellen and McHugh. And I think they'll be good enough.
I agree. I suppose, given that I think Chancel's actually probably looked our best defender in the last couple of games that he's played. So I suppose there's an argument that he could be put on the left-hand side. But yeah, I'd be happy with the back four of either Manquillo and Bemba, Yedlin, and then it's going to be Clark and Lejeune in the centre. I think it could be a big game for Lejeune in a sense, because there's a part of me thinks that he looks a little low on confidence at the moment. I suppose you could apply that argument to the whole side, but Lejeune after you know that magnificent 40-minute spell against Spurs and And coming back, he did all right. I mean, he gave away the penalty against Southampton, but that wasn't reflective of how he played the whole match. But just lately, he's looked a little bit shorn of confidence. So I would love to see him pick up again, because it's quite obvious that he does have ability. We've seen it, and I think it could be a big game for him, and he's going to be up against, I suppose, a tough opponent in Vardy. But we'll see how that goes. The other thing is as well, obviously, I mean, we brought this in the past, but I think Darlow, despite the fact he conceded two at West Brom and three at Chelsea, I think, and I don't know if you'd agree, but he has to stay in goal now.
I agree. You know fine well from our many conversations, both at and on this podcast, I think Todd Caldado is Newcastle's number one. Just quickly to go back there, I would play Mbembe
at left back.
Back, because they've got Vardy up front. No, I'd play him centre back.
Okay.
I don't care which one. Probably purely because he's fast and he's also really good at reading the game and intercepting through balls, whereas Lejeune and Clark tend to be more reactive. And I really think it would be a good game for him to bring him in as centre back, maybe even besides Lascelles, who's reportedly back training. But I suppose we don't know, do we? We don't know who's fit. We don't know how he'll go. But I certainly think Mbemba's worth a shout in front of Caldado.
Aye, good shout. Well, moving on to the context of the game. You mentioned before Everton and Leicester, obviously, you know, Everton only up until really a week and a half ago, Leicester up until the end of October, they were absolutely struggling. And I remember looking at these fixtures, and obviously this is before we lost to Burnley and Bournemouth, but these two home fixtures were two matches that I thought that we've got to be looking at getting at least 4 points out of them, even six based on their form at that point in time. But they've changed. They've completely changed. I mean, we've obviously changed because you could say that we're going into these games more desperate for points now than I think maybe either of us had anticipated we would be. And additionally, unfortunately, Everton and Leicester are picking up. So, you know, bearing that in mind and being our next six fixtures, I think we've got West Ham and Arsenal after these two. And we've got, obviously, the Man City and Brighton game as well. I think we want to be getting out of this other side on 20 points. So this game on Saturday, out of all the fixtures we've got, would you consider this one, and I hate to say it, but I'm going to, would you consider this to be the kind of must-win one? And if we don't win, do you think the knock-on effects might be, you know, there might be a kind of a little bit of panic setting in amongst the fan base?
No, it's not a must-win game. We have five games coming up before the 2nd of January, which are massive games. But you could win three and lose two, and that would still be all right. Or you could win two and draw one and lose two, and that would, you know what I mean? It's hard to call one game. It's like, yes, if we get done on Saturday, people will panic. But will the manager panic? Probably not. We'll have a backup for Everton, and you know, the team are low on confidence, but they're playing at home. The 1-2-5, the big one, the 1-2-5 celebration, well-known anniversary that everyone that celebrates. I remember my 25th birthday, for the biggest birthday of my life. Like, the players are in front of a supportive home crowd. I don't want to say this stage of the season that there are any must-win games. Technically, we're games on must-win, but we're going to lose between now and the end of the season. So it's kind of pointless. You also don't know the context of Leicester, because if Leicester continue to perform in the way that they have so far under Puel in the finish 7th, then it's definitely not a must-win game, because Watford wasn't a must-win game. You know, I mean, looking at what through Leicester's fixtures there, I believe they've only won one away fixture, which was at Swansea, which, like ourselves, and were probably a little bit more lucky to win at Swansea than we were. So, you know, it's not like they've been tiring it up away from home. I think Puel's come in and sorted the home form out. Back-to-back wins against Leicester and Burnley, 6 points there. I mean, they drew at West Ham. West Ham were quite good and probably the better side when they played each other. So they can definitely be got at. And there's so much going on with the sale of the club and all sorts in the media speculation about that. I don't feel that there's any must-win games until we're in the bottom three. You can't say it's a must-win game or Wednesday's a must-win game. We're not in the bottom three. Until you're in the bottom three, you don't have any must-win games. So,
yeah,
I'm slightly reticent to say that. And like I said, with Brighton, Stoke, West Ham, these and Everton coming up, there's, you know, I hear those fixtures and I hear points. So I'm not going to throw myself into whatever river I'm staying next to in Singapore if we get beat on what is Sunday morning for me.
I'm not so sure there's a river there, mate. I think it's a big bay. But you know what? It's a body of water. So, you know, don't throw yourself into it, because I'm sure the outcome will be the bad either way, you know. The thing for me, I mean, obviously, yeah, of course it's not a must win. I suppose the way I'm looking at this is that I do see this as a very winnable fixture, and getting the 3 points, regardless of how they come, I think it'll be a huge boost to the confidence, because I suppose my concern at the minute is, and I kind of picked up on it a little bit in the sort of mid spell of the match against West Brom, just before they got their second goal and just after that, the players, the confidence is starting to look lacking ever so slightly. And now that's not something I'd really picked up on in previous defeats. I wasn't there for Watford, so I don't know if that was the case, but I suppose it was the first time I could kind of feel that lack of confidence coming from the pitch. So, and even against Chelsea, we went 1-0 up, but even to go 1-0 up, it felt like the belief just wasn't there. So I suppose on Saturday, what I'm kind of hoping for is that there's initially, like you say, we get back to basics, and there's that kind of let's put in the first sort of 50-60 minutes, do everything to avoid losing, contain them, don't be too adventurous to a certain extent, just don't give them anything, and then try and hit them, as opposed to, I mean, a couple of the home games, Bournemouth in particular, obviously Man U, when we came out the blocks and kind of went for it, and unfortunately ended up losing. What would your kind of preferred start of the game, obviously other than a 3-goal lead within the first 10 minutes, how do you anticipate we're kind of starting the match?
Well, as I put on Twitter on the weekly pod account, I put match preview today of Newcastle United 3, Leicester 1, and I put like Richie 7 minutes, Marino 40 minutes, and then Leicester hit straight back. I think with the you know, you've got Leeds flags first game, you've got War flags at the other end of the pitch doing something big, you've got 51,000 people hopefully getting there before, you know, kick off with 51,000 flags and all sorts, and I reckon it's going to be a really pumped atmosphere. We tend to start games well anyway. We'll start at Watford well. It wasn't as strong a start as Bournemouth, but we started Watford well. We started West Brom. I felt we didn't really threaten the West Brom goal, but the first 10 minutes. So I think it's really time, and I hate to use luck, but I think it's time we've got a bit of luck in the first 10-15 if we do start the game like that. And got a goal, and then protect that goal. Not get us, you know, against Chelsea, it was just so predictable how deep we were going to get. We got so deep against them, which is what Hazard thrives on. And I'd like to see us defend that 1-0 lead and get the half time, AA Stoke, West Ham, I think it was 1-1 against Southampton. Oh, no, it was 1-0 at half-time, possibly. Anyway, that's what we were good at. Let's score first, let's score early, and let's get the half-time 1-0. And then, at worst, you're looking at maybe conceding in the second half and drawing the game and taking that point forward. So I think we need to start positively, and I think that if you allow Leicester's players time and space and, you know, space in behind the run, we're going to get beat, and I'm sure Rafa will know that. So let's see the kind of cagey, defensive, boring football that we grew to know and love at the start of the season.
I can't really disagree with that. I mean, it's going to, what I'm interested in seeing is how, I mean, obviously Leicester's results have picked up under Puel. I think they've got like 3 wins, 2 draws and only 1 defeat in his first 6 games, which is excellent, you know, from any kind of side from 7th downwards. That's a really good run of form. What I'm interested in seeing is obviously the squad that they've got. I mean, they won the league a couple of seasons ago, which, you know, is still feels quite surreal. It's almost like the kind of same feeling every time I see like a tweet from Donald Trump. It's like, man, you're the president of the United States, and it's like, oh man, Leicester won the league 2 years ago. But the players that they've got, they do, Yeah, they have spent a lot of money, but they do have a kind of a squad that's set up to play in a certain way. And I haven't really seen anything of them, other than, you know, the goals or the brief highlights on Match of the Day since Puel took over. So I suppose what I'm interested in seeing on Saturday is, are we going to have, I wonder if we have like a kind of tentative approach from both sides, because their whole title win was based on just smacking people on the break. And when they did us 3-0 at St. James's Park, that was a kind of classic case in point. They were brutal in that match, I thought. So it will be interesting to see. And obviously, you know, they have got a strong squad. I mean, I don't know if you saw, but I think last night they played in that under-21s or whatever it is, the EFL, Johnson's Paint, whatever it's called, new Zenith Data Systems, Simod Cup or whatever it is. They had a £45 million pound side out in that match. You just think, who are these players? I mean, and then you look at people like Slimani and they paid £30 million for him. So you think with all the kind of all the quality they've got in that squad, there would be a completely different side. But as I say, they are counter attacking side, and is that kind of what you expect from M&T and James's Park?
Yeah, well, I heard a report of their win against Spurs, which was the performance was almost two Leicester in 2015, like Puel had put out a Leicester of 2 years ago, in terms of sitting deep, sitting compact, letting balls come into the box, letting Spurs have the ball out wide. Which would be a fucking danger against us once the mighty Hostler gets in the end of the balls, really put in the box. So you'd be warned, Leicester, if he starts. And then playing counter-attack, relentless counter-attack football, direct football with balls in behind, making the centre-backs play and face towards their own goal. So I'd expect much more of the same from that. Just want to make a point about Leicester in 2015. I went there. Rafa Benitez's first game in charge got beat 1-0 on Monday night. I'm telling you, I was going to go anyway. For some mental reason. And it was just, we're expecting this almost carnival of support and fervour and, you know, this fairy tale. And it was just another trip to a shite, industrial state-ish, one pub, football club.
Flat pack room.
Which was just terrible. The atmosphere was clappers. It was drums. It was, you're going down with the Villa, going down, like, lads, you're going to win the league and you're spending the whole game singing it. I think we only had a small allocation because it was Monday night and McLaren was supposed to be in charge, like 1,200 Newcastle fans. I don't know, it kind of turned me off the Leicester fairy tale back then, because they're still and always will be a little bit tin pot in that respect. But never mind that. When they beat with 3-0 St. James's that year, it was a really surreal game. They only had 3 shots on target, I think. And Newcastle were rubbish as well, always were under McLaren. But it was interesting that game. McLaren probably didn't give them the respect. They tried to have a go a little bit, and it just didn't work. So, you know, I think you need to show them a little bit of respect this time, and let's get back to getting men behind the ball and making life difficult for them. And hopefully when we go forwards, I'm going to get a good start. The quality that we do have in terms of Atsu coming back, Matt Ritchie, etc., hopefully come back to form. And Perez probably playing 10 behind Hostelu or Gale. Hopefully that'll count.
We need to get like the players to like channel our inner Gabriel Obertan, don't we? You remember a few seasons ago when he ran the show against Leicester, beat them 1-0, didn't we?
No, I did either. the screen fell off.
That's
so it got delayed. I don't know. I'd like to say an hour and a half. I don't know what it was, but just because we had like 3 more pints before the game.
20 minutes.
Sunderland got beat 8-0 that day. You know what's funny about Sunderland getting beat 8-0 that day? Those were the glory days for Sunderland fans. They're the days to look back to with fondness. Beat 8-0 at Southampton with a full away end, because their fans have just given up on them as a football club. The club's dead. That amuses me greatly.
That was a spectacular. I mean, that was a spectacular result that day. 8-0 is, I mean, it is just an absolute slaughtering, isn't it? I remember that day with great fondness, and I'll always have a soft spot for Southampton and Gus Poyet because of it. Thank you. You briefly mentioned free scoring Spanish centre forward Hostelu there. Talking about the lineups initially and who would like to see playing on Saturday. Now, obviously, there's always the argument we need to put our strongest team out. Now, there's no two ways about it. Dwight Gayle is our best centre forward, definitely in terms of his goal scoring. And you know, he's he's gone to Stamford Bridge and he's gone to Old Trafford and he scored. I mean, you cannot really ask much more. I mean, that's, you know, I can't imagine there are many forwards from a club that's predicted to finish in the sort of bottom eight have got like a centre forward who go to those grounds and bang goals, and not just kind of tap-ins. I mean, both were really, really good finishers goals. But given what we're kind of anticipating the setup being, i.e. that kind of cautious, solid foot, pragmatic football that we play, do you see Gale dropping down to the bench and it being a Hosolu Perez two up front? Obviously, Perez just behind Hosolu.
I think I've said before that you've got to give a little bit of respect to Perez and that, even though he has done loads since he's come back into the team. We did look more structured and more solid through the middle of the pitch, where against Watford and Brighton particularly, and Man United even, we looked hopelessly open. It doesn't make any sense to me that Jose Perez would make that difference, but then look at the games and look at his impact. Although against Chelsea, you could say he potentially wasn't playing there. But so, you know, that for that reason alone, I think Perez, you've got to give him a chance and start there. You know, up front, in the back, they've got Wes Morgan and Harry Maguire. I mean, Maguire is probably a good player and he's probably got a bit more about him than Morgan, but I'd really like to see. If I'm them, who do I want to play against? I want to play against Hosolu. I don't want to play against Dwight Gull. So for that reason, I just want to see Jonjo Shelby and Miguel Marino playing balls in between the centre-backs and the full-backs, Dwight Gill stretch and play, and Perez getting as close as possible to him. I think that's how I'd do it. I probably think that's what he'll do. Then we've been doing this podcast long enough with Rafa as manager to see him start Mitrovic. But he won't. But it's always possible. It's always just hard trying to second guess him.
But I'm not even going to cover any Mitrovic territory, mate. It's just not happening. I think we've just been flogging that horse for so long now, haven't we? It is like you say, it's impossible to predict what, if any, time on the pitch Mitrovic is going to get at any stage of the season. I would like to see Gale start just because I think he's really starting to come into form at the moment. And the other thing as well is that Morgan and Maguire is a good player. He reads the game well, but he's not particularly pacey. And obviously Wes Morgan isn't pacey at all. And I think Gale will have more joy against them, especially in the sort of first 50, 60 minutes when he's full of energy. So that would be my preference, and definitely, obviously, we've said it before, you've got to go with Marino and Shelby just because, you know, their record together is fantastic this season. So
I think started one game together, you know,
mate. When they've been on the pitch. Oh. So, you know, they're unbeaten in, like, what, 75 minutes collectively. So, you know, there you go. There's your stats for you right there. In terms of the opposition, we've briefly spoken about them, but are there any players in the Leicester side that kind of give you particular cause for concern when you consider who they might be up against in our side?
They've got good players. I like Albrighton. I think he's underrated. I really like his directness and his willingness to put the ball in the box first time. And Vardy feeds off that, obviously. Gray. I don't know much about Ndidi and Ebora, but they cost a lot of money. Mahrez is a class player. Hasn't really done it against Newcastle that much in the other times we've played him. The one player which interests me is Danny Simpson, because there's so much. Danny Simpson is like, trying to think of a player from kind of Mark Corby's era from the podcast we do with him that splits opinion as much as Danny Simpson, because Danny Simpson's one of the worst fullbacks I've seen play for Newcastle, yet he played in a team that finished fifth. He was never under any threat of relegation while he played for Newcastle. Obviously, he joined in the promotion season. And he generally played in some reasonable defensive records, yet he just consistently allowed teams to put the ball in the box. He was more than happy. We conceded several goals with him half-arsed trying to stop crosses or just not trying to stop crosses, because he'd rather do that than get beaten. And since then, despite mine and other people's criticism, he's going to win a Premier League. Still got nowhere near the England squad, mind, which should tell you something, by the way. And he's played the Champions League and he's still playing Premier League football, whereas, you know, players who've come and gone for us since aren't. So he's a really interesting one. And if Cristian Atsu's playing, I'd really back Cristian Atsu to have a field day against him.
I agree.
I don't rate Danny Simpson at all. Though, you know, there is kind of a supporter group out there, or faction, that constantly sends social media Danny Simpson slaughtered by Newcastle fans when he was here. Really good player. Personally, I don't see it, but then He's won the Premier League title. I haven't.
No, I don't recall him being particularly slow at the ball. Back then, I wasn't going to many matches because, you know, I was living in Chile, so it was a bit difficult. But the mention of Atsu up against him, I would really fancy Atsu against him. I mean, obviously, if Atsu isn't playing, I would like to see Aarons given a shot against him, because I think Aarons would absolutely obliterate Simpson. When he's in full pelt, he is really effective. Obviously, he's had his issues with injuries over the years, but if he's fit and he's ready, then I think there's probably, and Atsu isn't available, then I think there's probably a case for giving Aarons a shot, just because Murphy, I think he's starting to look a little bit tired, and also it's just one of those, he's been kind of three consecutive games in the firing line now. It might be time to withdraw him, I don't know. And we were down at West Brom and Atsu looked really good when he came on. But in terms of getting back to Simpson, I think the way I look at it is that we replaced him, in my opinion, with Debussy, who was a better player. I can see the logic. Would Simpson be the kind of player who would do a job for us now? Maybe. But at the time, I think we just had a better fullback in place. So there you go.
Yeah. The thing about Aarons is, if Atsu's not fit this week, if Rolando Aarons doesn't get a game in either of these two games, he's like Mirkic, he's done it in Newcastle, isn't he?
Absolutely.
He can't get a game when we're struggling to create, struggling to score. Jacob Murphy's done okay, but like okay as in you're a young lad who would want to see do well okay. Like, not really okay, like no assists or goals. And if Rolando Aarons still can't get in the team ahead of him with so many games coming up and so many games this week, three games in a week, if he can't get in for one of them home games, I think we know where his future lies, and it's not at St James' Park.
Absolutely. And to a certain extent, there's a part of me who thinks that would be a shame. I mean, I've got no idea what goes on behind closed doors, but in terms of the potential that he showed before, you know, he's obviously got ability, but who knows? I mean, it might work out brilliantly, or it might not, and I suppose we'll see soon enough. So moving on, as I think we've more or less covered the match. The 125th anniversary this weekend. I've obviously because I live in London, I haven't kind of been like party to what the preparations are in the city, but it looks like there's a lot going on. I am looking forward to seeing the flags displays on Saturday, because I think with both sides of the stadium full of flags, it is going to visually look pretty spectacular. Have you got anything that you'd like to add regarding the 125th anniversary?
Already said, it's a bit of a weird one. It's good, it's nice, you know, like the club giving everyone flags, nice. I'm sure they'll have plenty going on in terms of legends and I try to read the Chronicle's article in a day, but for some reason, every time I go on the Chronicle's website today, it just automatically diverts me to Skybet.
Yeah, pop-ups. Shade for pop-ups, are Chronicle.
Morally questionable, in my opinion, but I suppose everyone's got a, you know, you've got a journalism isn't cheap. So I don't exactly know what's going on, because I don't want a Skybet account, which will come as news to the Chronicle. But, you know, it's good and it's nice, but it's also a little reminder for me that certainly the last 70 years, the club's just been hampered by maladministration. It's like a running theme throughout Newcastle United's modern history and also not so modern history. I'd recommend everyone listening to speak to him, he's a nice bloke, but Michael Walker's book up there, Michael, who we had on the podcast a couple of weeks ago for his new book, Green Shoots, his book up there is a fantastic chronicle of how badly Newcastle United's been run since inception, really. But you know what, it's nice that the club are doing it. It's positive that kids, younger fans will get to see and be part of something like this. Like you mentioned, flags at both ends of the ground should look really good. I'm good to be missing it. I'll be watching it in a bar in Singapore at 1:30 in the morning. So it's great. It's just so weird, though, that you've got this, you know, Newcastle United as a football club, as an entity, are celebrating 125 years of their combined history. Yet Newcastle United as a football club and an entity are like, you know, refused to back the manager in the summer. It looks like there's not going to be a lot of money in January. It's just a bit weird for me. Like, I can't really get excited about the celebration because of the fact that you know, the football club are doing it, but then the football club is Mike Ashley, the football club are owned by Mike Ashley. And, you know, the continued success of Newcastle United continues to be jeopardised, whilst we also say, wow, look at us, 125 years old, hasn't it all been great? And it's just, I find it difficult there to get excited about it, I suppose. But I'm not there, so it doesn't matter. And even if I was, I'm one bloke, I'm sure it'll be a massive success. I still think 125 is like just a total non-event of a year. May as well, you could have done 124. 125 isn't a thing, but you know what, that's just me being miserable. So I'm sure it'll be class. What do you think, mate?
Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to, I mean, I am, there is a little bit of me looking forward to this, you know, this greatest lineup or whatever it is, but bearing in mind that it's 8,000 votes on the Chronicle, I mean, you know, who knows what it's going to look like. I am looking forward to seeing some of the old players introduced, just because it's pure nostalgia for me. But the rest of the stuff, other than the flags, which I am looking forward to seeing, I'm not that arsed about. I'm looking forward to the 200th anniversary because I'll be celebrating my 110th birthday around about the same time, so that should be interesting, you know. But apart from that, I'm just desperate for to get a good result on the pitch, mate. That's my focus. I'm really desperate to crack on and get the 3 points sorted. And
you know, Norman, you know, there's a lot of talk in the Chronicle pushing the club pushed it as well about, you know, your favourite ever Newcastle lineup.
Mm-hmm.
My favourite Newcastle lineup is the team you picked on Saturday. It's far more important than anything else, and it's like you say, it's all well and good having flags at both ends and 51,000 flags and LED displays, and that is great, and I like it, and it's you know, positive. Well done, everybody involved. But there's no point pretending that everything's fine before kickoff, and then people reverting to type and getting on the team's back if we're 1-0 down, or Hosselu passes to the Sports Direct advertising hoarding rather than a fellow black and white shirt, or, you know, Carl Dollar slices a kick out of play, you know. So it's kind of like you say, yes, 125's mint, it pales in this insignificance compared to what happens when the whistle goes to kick the game off.
Well, I mean, there is an argument that if Les Ferdinand's in the all-time team, you know, maybe it's just an argument to have him on the pitch for a bit. But I suppose we're coming to a kind of natural conclusion. I guess quickly we can end on your predictions, mate. Apart, you've already put 3-1 out there. I mean, are you sticking to the 3-1?
I'll stick with 3-1. I can't see where it's been a clean sheet. But I think we'll score, and I think we've been unlucky, and we've got a good team. I think that has, like Craig Hope said it was on Monday, he's probably been trying too hard to try and force it, and, you know, we need to get back to, you know, I would take a 1-1 draw. If it was a 1-1 draw, the same vein as Liverpool, I would take it, be positive points on the board. You know, Mark Douglas, who was quoted recently, has been putting out great stats recently on his Twitter account. I advise everyone to give him a follow, saying that when we started this bad run, we're 6 points clear of the relegation zone. Now we're only 5. Those teams below aren't starting to pick up points, so anything we pick up is really positive, and a point would be a good result. Having said that, I'm going to back the lads to get back to winning ways. It's going to be a good night at St James's, and we'll see 3-1 to Newcastle United.
I love that. I'm going to go for a 2-goal margin, but I'm going to go 2-0. The reasons are, Puel's due a defeat, we're due a clean sheet, and we're due to bang 2 goals in at home. So that's it. I'm going 2-0. I'm going for a sort of 30-odd... I reckon we'll score in the 30-odd minute mark. Leicester will have to start pushing, and we'll just bang them again about the 75th, 80th. That's as precise as it's going to get, but that's what I'm going for.
Nice one. How long have we been doing, Norman? How long is your first podcast? I'm interested.
It's, we're coming up to the 35-minute mark.
Wow, it's absolutely flown by that. The drag on really badly when you're hosting, you know, you probably realised.
Well, you know what? It's been a pleasure hosting it, and for people listening to this, please do feel free to go on and criticise us and tell us I'm worse than shite. I'll just have to live with it. But it's been an absolute pleasure, and we will, I guess the next time we speak to you, who knows, mate, as you're off, you're swanning it, watching those men hit the ball round a big field with a kind of square, like a square bit of wood. And I'll be back on here on Saturday night, Sunday morning at the latest with the Leicester match review, the 2-0 win. So thanks very much, everyone, and speak to you later.